Hi, I'm Ben Trefney, KALW's news director, asking for your support in KALW's spring membership campaign. Go to KALW.org and click donate now. We appreciate it.
KALW.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hena Baba. Today, we're going to hear the story of San Francisco author Jamali Yogis. Jamal lives at Ocean Beach with his wife and three sons, but he spent many years traveling the world seeking spiritual enlightenment. That time is captured in his upcoming book, All Our Waves Are Water. Jamal sat down with a fellow surfer, KALW's Ben Trefney, to talk about it.
You write a lot about a man you met in Tibet. Who is he and what did he mean to you?
It was actually an area where the Dalai Lama now lives, in India, that's sort of a Tibetan enclave. I was there studying and ran into this young monk named Sonam Wangdu, who we became, I started tutoring him in English. And after about a week, I realized we were in the exact same boat, that he was suffering from missing his family, who he left when he was 11 years old in Tibet. Somebody had asked him if he wanted to make the pilgrimage to India. He had, and he'd ordained under the Dalai Lama, and it became harder and harder to communicate back to Tibet with the Chinese occupation, and so he lost track of his family, and they didn't have any touch, and he was deeply sad about this, and I was deeply sad about having planned a year-long trip to India with my Indian-American girlfriend, who then we broke up right before the trip, and so we had this sort of connection of both being heartbroken, and it was just so incredibly healing to be around someone else who was suffering like I was, but also he had a different way of approaching sadness, and that was ultimately what I wanted to write about in the book, because I thought it was so incredible that he was and is probably the happiest person I've ever met. And it seemed like a cliche because I kept waiting for it to be an act, like, you know, here I am meeting this Tibetan monk and he's the happiest. He's so joyful and he's so joyful to be around.
Even when he's going through tremendous mental hardships.
Exactly. And I would see him grieving, and at the same time, you know, the first time I remember seeing him cry, and he was picking up snow from the ground, and he said, you know, this Tibet snow, he had very broken English, he said, this Tibet snow, very same, India snow, you know, many thinking my family, and he was crying, and I put my arm around him, and he smiled, his usual jovial smile, and he said, Jamal, you funny, this very sad, no problem, and that stuck with me, sort of like a mantra. You know, I still use it today, sort of, this very sad, no problem. And it was really, there was so much there, I think, just in that little statement of that, not running away from the troubling emotions.
So in your latest book, I'd like to go through some of the ways in which you found enlightenment in mm-hmm. different parts of the world. So there's a powerful story about an experience you had at the Western Wall in Jerusalem. What happened there?
That one I was really reluctant to even tell the story because, you know, as I talk about in the book, there's all these stories of people who go to Jerusalem. There's actually a syndrome called Jerusalem Syndrome of people who go to the Holy Land and they end up having some psychological break, basically, where they think, you know, spirits are talking to them, or they think they're supposed to move the Western Wall. And I remember one night going down to the Western Wall and just by myself having some hummus and dolmas, and I hadn't been there yet on the trip. And it's amazing because I knew this, but I didn't know it in an experiential sense, but all the religions are right there. Like, you hear the church bells of this 1,000-year-old church from the Christian quarter tolling at the exact same time that the call to prayer, the muezzin, you know, Allahu Akbar, are going, and the Jews are down there davening at sundown. This was a Friday for Shabbat. And just the cacophony of sounds by itself was something that I wasn't prepared for. And it was a life-changing experience just to be there and touched that temple that so many other people had touched and prayed and sort of poured their angst and hopes and dreams into this stone.
Literally, taking messages and putting them into the wall.
Exactly. You go up to the Wailing Wall, and there are little pieces of paper rolled up that have prayers written on them, and you know, people even put little dollar bills and things into the cracks of the wall, and you feel the weight of this conflict, so much bloodshed and so much beauty and meaning, and you know, without sort of giving away the story, I just broke down there, and it was kind of like all that history and was hitting me at once, and it was certainly a life-changing experience, and one that I knew that I could never do justice with words, but I wanted to give it a shot. So that's what I did here.
There's a traveler named Jimmy who you met many times in Bali, and there's a passage that captures a moment when you had doubts about surfing a big tube at a point called Padang, mm-hmm. and he told you to believe. And I'm wondering if you could read that passage, because I think it captures this feeling of surfing and confronting fear really well.
My brain didn't want to go, but my body seemed to move anyway. Paddling as hard as I ever had, the water sucked me up, up, up to the crest. I stood, but it was too late. The wave was already going concave, and like that, I was airborne. In that blink of weightlessness, I smashed my foot back down on the board's tail in an attempt to feel the face of the wave to keep from nosediving. I knew this was unlikely to stop me. I almost surrendered to a horrid fall. But it worked. My fins touched vertical blue liquid. I landed with my feet positioned on the wax, and I began zooming down the mountain. The wave was fast and smooth. It shimmered, and I enjoyed the raw speed as I dropped and dropped. But as I transitioned to the flat sea, the base of the wave seemed to hiccup. It dropped below surface level, slurping against the reef, and I realized that I had never seen a wave look anything like this. It didn't even look much like a wave. It looked more like a blue-green subway tunnel that had been chopped in half and was falling from space. The blue circuit warped and bent into a tunnel so long it seemed that I would have to be going the speed of a subway to have any hope of making it to the end. Looking down, I could see the coral seeming to rise toward me. Water can form optical illusions, but there looked to be only a foot or two of water between me and that hard white sharpness. There was no going back. There's no thinking in these situations anyway. I heard a whistle in my ear as the wind rushed past. I leaned onto my heels, trying to veer left, the direction the wave was peeling. But as the water encased me, it didn't matter which way I wanted to go. The wave was in control now. I kept floating through until a burst of foam hit me from behind, and I was, could it be possible, going to make it out, please? Yes? No.
I like that passage a lot. Why do you like to confront fears? Like, why is it important to you to take challenges like that?
I mean, I think at the bottom line for surfers is that it's fun. You know, there's still that feeling that it's a good time to be out there playing in the ocean. And every type of play involves challenges. I think that is part of the fun. It's just our chemical makeup. We need challenges to grow, and if it wasn't challenging, it wouldn't be fun. I think on a deeper level, fear is an illusion. You know, it is actually not there, except for the fact that it's there in your mind. The fear in surfing, it doesn't often just go away, you know, just like it doesn't in life. If you're going up on stage to give a talk, the fear doesn't vanish in an instant if you have it, just because you know, start breathing mindfully. But you can learn to sort of lessen it and also embrace it in a different way, much like Sonam was talking about embracing sadness. You can say, okay, here's the feeling, here's the sensation of fear, And what if I frame it as energy? You know, what if I frame it as adrenaline? What if I frame it as just sensation instead of this thing with a negative that's, you know, like a wall holding me back from that wave? And I think that happens again and again in surfing. And so if you can kind of get comfortable with that feeling of fear, you end up having experiences out in the ocean that are new and that help you learn. And I've always just loved that little theater where you can experiment with fear and then hopefully take that back on land.